your full name, please?
Byron David Smith.
I just wanted his story. You know, I wanted to find out the rest of the facts of what happened at the house.
Whoever it was who was breaking into my home had been doing it for so long that I was no longer willing to live in fear.
And you heard footsteps coming down the stairs, is that correct?
Yes, and then I saw his feet, and then I saw his legs, and when I saw his hips, I shot. I was reacting.
Okay. Were you reacting to, is what I'm asking.
The threat, the previous losses, I spent 20 years overseas, a couple years in Bangkok, several years in Cairo, 20 years overseas, not one problem.
You would think after such a horrific event, shooting and killing two people that broke into your house, that he would be very emotional, maybe crying at times. I didn't notice any of that from Byron Smith. He just maintained his composure, which was rather odd.
He jammed. Trigger clicked and she laughed at me. I just pulled out the .22 and shot her. If you're trying to shoot somebody and they laugh at you, you go again. I thought she was dead and it turned out she wasn't. So I did a good clean finishing shot.
My question, Byron, is why did you shoot again? She didn't have a weapon in her hand. She was
actually, I don't know if she had a weapon in her hand until later. Okay. I wasn't looking at her hands.
But she was laying there, hurt. Did she? She wasn't threatening you. Just asked.
I don't know if she was threatening me.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. Good evening.
Our episode today is Lying in Wait, The Killings of Haley Keifer and Nicholas Brady. So this was on Thanksgiving Day 2012. Two teens were shot to death while in the act of burglarizing a home in Little Falls, Minnesota. The killings were initially believed to be justified under Minnesota's self-defense laws, but circumstances of the case brought this into question. Was the homeowner, Byron David Smith, justified in his actions? After all, he was in his own home, apparently minding his own business, when two people entered in the commission of a felony. Or did Byron Smith in fact lie in wait with a plan to murder two teenagers in cold blood? So this is our topic.
This is an interesting one, because I think he could have gotten away with this. But there's some incriminating evidence that got left behind.
Yes, right.
As we shall see.
Well, I think his overall behavior, though, made him...
Well, yes.
Got him into trouble.
But defending your own home kind of doctrine would have worked.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that when we get to it. Can I just do a couple 5-star reviews and then we'll do the beer?
Of course.
And we can move down to the quiet end?
Let's do this.
I did want to mention a little idea that I had about in the future. I'd like to work our way towards maybe not reading all the 5-star reviews. I mean, certainly thanking everyone and reading them and being super thankful for them because they're wonderful. But I thought maybe for the listeners it would be more interesting if we started having some more discussion. So my idea was if people wanted to call and leave a voicemail or even just send emails with comments and theories on the cases that we discuss, then at the end of each episode we could have our feedback section.
Well, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, where we'd read or play comments and we could answer questions, talk about cases. I often get emails giving me great information on cases, but I don't really ever talk about that because I've moved on to the next case.
Well, yeah, and I know we usually have questions just ourselves.
Yeah.
When we've done a case and finished discussing it, there's still things to talk about.
Yeah. And I think that would be more interesting for the listeners than, because they can go and read the 5-star reviews. And I think it might be more to make it more of a sharing atmosphere, more of a discussion type of show.
Yeah, let's see how that works.
Okay. Well, I mean, I already do get emails, but maybe if people want to start writing in or calling in with more things you'd like to talk about, then we could work towards doing that in the near future. But for today, I'm going to read some 5-star reviews, because that's still where we're at. But that's my long-range plan.
And a good plan it is.
I think so. So I'm going to read a 5-star review from Lisa in Le Crescent, Minnesota. Great podcast. Love these two together. Very informative. Keep it up. Well, thank you, Lisa.
Lisa, that's a very nice review. Thank you.
And welcome to the brewery. And then from www. And probably there was a way to pronounce that, but that's how it reads. Didn't know you could make murder so charming. This is a great podcast for fans of true crime. The hosts are simply delightful, and they present their stories of murder using careful facts, intriguing discussion, and sympathy for the victims. Subscribe, you won't regret it.
No, you won't.
Well, thank you, Lil, and welcome to the brewery.
Yes, welcome. Come on down.
And The Perfect Combination by Crystal. I love listening to True Crime Brewery. It's the perfect combination of true crime and beer, two of my favorite things, with hosts that seem like the sweetest people. Every episode feels like a conversation you would love to be a part of. So, Crystal, welcome down to the quiet end.
Come on down.
Great. Okay. Why don't you let us know what we've got for beer, because that's important.
Well, tonight we have a really good beer. This one is called Todd the Axeman. I always wonder how people come up with names for these beers, but this is a really cool name.
Yeah, they're very clever ones, yeah.
So Todd is one of the highest rated beers in Minnesota. It's brewed by Surly Brewing Company in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota.
I like the name of the brewing company. Is that the name of the person, or are they Surly?
They're Surly.
I like that.
So Todd is an American IPA, which is a little bit different from the traditional English IPA. They tend to be gold to reddish amber in color. They have more of an herbal or citric hop aroma, more bitter, and medium-bodied. Now this particular one, Old Todd, is a hazy orange golden color. It's got a nice white head with a little bit of lacing. There's a good citrus and pine aroma, some sweet malt. The taste is very strong grapefruit, a little bit of pine, and some bread.
Bread. So yeasty.
Yeasty. Bready.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hoppy beer, obviously. It's an IPA, but not too hoppy, not over the top. Very nicely balanced. Good beer.
All right.
I can see why it's one of the highest rated beers in Minnesota.
Really? It's enjoyable then?
It is.
Yeah. All right. Let's open it up and head down, shall we?
We shall. Let's do this.
Okay, Dickie, I'm ready to head to the quiet end. Do you want to grab that beer and we'll head on down?
Got the beer, got the glasses. Let's go. You know what, though? There seems to be more people at the quiet end.
Well, word's catching on that it's the place to be.
I'm thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I recognize a lot of the same faces. I think people are starting to come out when we're doing this.
Yeah.
And they just want to be part of the action.
All right. Well, as long as they're quiet, because it is the quiet end.
Well, we insist on it, and I think they are pretty respectful about that.
Yeah. All right.
But I think we have a following here.
Okay, well, I hope they get beer from the bar, because we don't have enough for everyone. We only have enough to share.
No, these are our beers.
Right.
I'm not sharing.
Okay, good. Okay, so just a little bit about the laws behind this case. A castle doctrine, also known as a castle law or a defense of inhabitation law, is a legal doctrine that designates a person's home as a place in which that person has protections and immunities permitting him, in certain circumstances, to use force, up to and including deadly force, to defend himself against an intruder. Now, lying in wait is a theory of first-degree murder, where one waits and watches for an opportune time to act, together with a concealment or an ambush, to take the other person by surprise. The situation necessary to find murder by lying in wait is an intentional murder committed under circumstances which include concealment of purpose, a substantial period of waiting for an opportune time to act, and a surprise attack on an unsuspecting victim from a position of advantage. So let's just keep these two definitions in mind as we begin to go over the events of Thanksgiving Day 2012.
Right, because I think you'll see what's going on here.
It's pretty clear.
Yes.
Yeah, it's horrible, really. But I'm going to try and start out objective, even though I know where I'm going to end up.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's start out on the objective side.
Let's try. I always try. So 18-year-old Haley Kiefer and her 17-year-old cousin Nicholas Brady, they spent the evening before Thanksgiving 2012 with Nicholas's sister Rachel. Now, Haley and Rachel weren't only cousins, but they were very close friends. The three grew up together. They went camping, they went hiking, they liked to swim. Now, as teens in Little Falls, Minnesota, though, there wasn't a lot to do. And that could be a problem in the area.
It could.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these three did a lot of things together. They were maybe not inseparable, but very good friends.
Closer than most, yeah. Yeah. I'd say for a brother and sister, they were pretty close.
Right.
Now, that might be part of where they grew up in the small town. Also, extended family all lived kind of close to each other there.
Yeah, because there's apparently not that much to do in Little Falls.
Well, plenty to do if you're a young kid, I guess. But once you're a teenager, there's no cultural events, there's no movies, there's no dances, you know, not a lot to do.
No. I mean, you can cruise around and look for things to do.
Sure, and that's what they did. They spent a lot of time riding around. Nick had a car that he'd actually built himself, put a lot together and rebuilt the engine and stuff. And he would drive around with Rachel and with Haley, you know, just listening to music, which, you know, that's okay when you're a teenager. That can be pretty entertaining, just to drive around and listen to music.
Well, sure.
Yeah. But there's also this element of you can get into trouble, you know. Like my mom always said, idle hands are the devil's workshop.
Did your mom say that?
She did.
I think she was quoting somebody.
Well, I'm not saying she was the author of the statement,
okay.
But she always said it to me as a child. And
yes.
So she's my reference point for the quote.
Maybe it was Benjamin Franklin or something.
Might have been someone a little more well-known than my mom, sure.
Yeah, but your mom, we'll give her attribution for that.
Well, in my mind, it's something my mom said.
Okay.
Okay. So Nick's family had a little nickname for him. He was called Nickel Baby. I think that's pretty cute. And sometimes Rachel would tease him in front of his high school friends, calling him that name. But, you know, he'd get angry, but not really, because the joking and the teasing went both ways. Now, according to Rachel, Nicholas was a real joker, and he was always smiling and laughing. And Haley is described by family members as really vivacious and outgoing. And she was athletic, too. She participated in gymnastics and track, and really was very involved in school activities until possibly that school year when this happened. She'd been kind of pulling away from that stuff. Her friends had said that she'd gotten into some drugs, and I think this is where the stealing came in. I think that they got involved with drugs, then they got involved with breaking into homes to get cash, and they were kind of off on the wrong track.
Yeah, it sounds like they were doing some petty crime type things.
Yeah.
And it would certainly be a reason, you know, if you're doing some drug use and you need some extra money to purchase the drugs, let's break into a house and steal some things.
Right, and maybe you're not thinking clearly because you're on the drugs.
Possibly.
Certainly not a smart thing to do. I mean, I think if you're going to break into a house, you are putting yourself at risk.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Maybe not for the things that happened in this case, but you could be at risk for other normal self-defense type of things.
You can. I mean, again, this is a small town. You're going to get found out eventually.
That's true. Well, Haley, Nick, and Rachel spent Wednesday night at a friend's apartment. Then Haley and Nick left Thanksgiving morning around 11 a.m. The plan was for everyone to meet up later at their grandma's house nearby for Thanksgiving dinner. But Nick and Haley never showed up, and neither of them were answering their phones. So this is very unusual. They're teenagers. They've got their cell phones. Why aren't they answering?
Yeah, those phones are glued to their hips.
Usually. Or the palms of their hands.
Yes, fingers at the ready.
Yeah, right. So this is worrisome, and it's Thanksgiving. It's not just any day. It's a family holiday.
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to be with family.
Exactly. Also, another concern was that it was snowing. Not a storm, per se, but there was some snow. It was, you know, difficult driving conditions. And because Nick wasn't experienced in driving in the winter conditions, his mother was really worried that they'd been in some kind of a car accident.
Yeah, I would be.
Sure.
They don't show up and it's snowing outside and you're thinking, I hope they didn't get into an accident.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, that's what a parent always thinks anyway, right?
Of course.
So the family spent Thanksgiving night worried and calling anyone who might have seen the pair. So it's Friday morning and family members still haven't heard from them. So they go out driving around town and going down the back roads looking for Nick's car. Maybe they're like stranded out there. Right? They could have gotten stuck in the snow. Many things could have happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a reasonable thing to start looking around your area.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a small town.
Yeah.
So they're going to be around.
They should be.
Yes. So they didn't find him. It's afternoon Friday now. So they went to the police station and reported them missing. It's been over 24 hours. Now, meanwhile, at 12:35 p.m. on Friday, Bill Anderson, a guy in town, he called his friend Byron Smith. Byron Smith was a 64-year-old retiree. And as soon as Byron answered the phone, Bill sensed that something bad had happened. He sounded strange. So Byron says to Bill, I think I've solved the break-ins. I think it's over. Then Byron asks Bill to find him a lawyer, adding, oh, you better get a deputy over here. Okay, so this is
so.
Over 24 hours after the kids
had gone missing.
Had been last seen, yes.
And this guy's saying something bad's happened.
Yeah, but he hasn't called for help. He just says this to his friend when his friend calls
him. And his friend called him.
Yes.
He didn't call the friend.
Nope.
Now, I guess there'd been some break-ins at this guy's house, correct?
Yes, the number is debatable, but yes, there had been.
Yeah, this guy retired in his hometown, looking to spend his golden years in relative peace and quiet.
He did. He had some valuable things in his home.
Yeah. I mean, he was in the State Department or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of world traveling. I'm taking your stuff to say, so go ahead. Tell me about it.
As Byron Smith calmly spoke on the phone, the dead bodies of Haley and Nick were lying on a tarp in his basement. So he'd shot them to death. And it had been about 24 hours since he'd done that. So Smith had returned to his family home a few years earlier, as you said. He'd worked for the State Department in Homeland Security for 16 years. He was an engineer, and he worked on installing security systems in embassies all over the world, and that includes South Africa, Moscow, Berlin, Cairo. So he's worldly.
It sounds like. Sounds like he's been around, and he's done a lot of things.
Yeah. Now he's back where he grew up, and it's the family home, I think, and so you would think everything was fine.
Right. Except for one tiny thing.
Yeah.
I mean, his home had been burglarized probably at least 3 times over the past year or so that Byron had been back in town. The thieves had taken money, family heirlooms, and a couple guns. So this guy has guns in his house.
He does.
So Byron had installed some video surveillance outside his home. And we can see on the cameras that Nick was casing the house on Thanksgiving with Haley before they broke a window and went inside. Byron Smith said that he'd been in his basement reading when Nick walked down the stairs. Byron shot Nick twice while he was on the stairs, then once more after he fell to the bottom of the stairs. Several minutes later, Haley was entered the house looking for Nick, and she was shot while she was still at the top of the stairs. She was wounded, fell down the stairs, and was shot 2 more times in the chest as she was lying on the floor. Now, In this time between the shootings, Byron had moved Nick's body away from the steps with a tarp. And then after Haley was dead or near death, he moved her to the tarp next to her cousin, shot her again in the head. So he's shot a bunch of times on these two kids. And he's made sure they're dead.
It doesn't sound like self-defense to me anymore.
No.
No.
I mean,
it's very sinister.
I guess you could say, well, he was protecting his house and in the heat of the moment just kept shooting, but this doesn't sound like that. It sounds more execution style.
Well, I mean, if someone's coming down your stairs, wouldn't you say, I have a gun, get out of my house, or something like that?
You would.
And then they'd turn around and run away. I mean,
you would think so, right?
I would think so, yes.
There'd be some warning.
Yeah.
You're there protecting your home. You're not there to kill people.
Yeah, well, Byron Smith had different ideas. So, a big question for me is, why weren't these deaths reported to police sooner? Why had he wasted waiting a day with the two bodies of these kids in his house? Now, police asked Byron Smith that question, and he said that he waited until the next day because he didn't want to bother the police on Thanksgiving Day. What do you think of that?
Well, that's really nice of him, isn't it?
Yeah.
He maybe wasn't going to do it even the next day, except for the fact that his friend called him.
Yeah.
And he said what had happened. I mean, it sounds like if he was waiting until after Thanksgiving, he would have called bright and early the day after Thanksgiving and said to the police, I shot a couple intruders in my house.
Nobody waits, though. Why would you wait? How could you even wait with dead people in your house unless you're...
I don't know.
One really...
You couldn't.
Fucked up guy.
Well, besides that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you would call.
Of course. Why aren't you on the phone?
People breaking into your house, you've shot them in self-defense type of thing, and you call the cops and say, I've just shot two intruders.
And if you're nervous about... And you're scared in your house, wouldn't you keep your phone with you? And then the first thing you do when you hear a noise is call?
Well, a normal thinking person would.
Yeah. Yeah. So when police arrived at the Brady house, Nick's mom, sister, and father were afraid that Nick and Haley had been in a car accident. And they were shocked to hear that both Nick and Haley had been shot to death. Rachel knew that her brother had been experimenting with drugs and that he'd done some stealing in the recent past, but she didn't know that he'd been breaking into homes. Now, evidence recovered from Nick's car was later linked to a burglary of the residence of a retired teacher the night before the killings. And Nick and some other high school kids had been hired the previous summer to do work in Smith's yard. So Smith claimed that his home was burglarized at least 11 times that summer. But these break-ins weren't reported to the police, so was he just... It seems like he was just deciding to take the law into his own hands.
Well, it does.
And do this whole setting a trap and...
And you would think, I mean, there's a discrepancy. His neighbor who called him said that he was told it was 3 times. Smith says it was 11 times, but even so, you'd call the police, right?
I would think so. Yeah.
Again, this
that's
is,
what the police are for.
This is small town America.
Right.
I mean, you call the police and say, I got somebody breaking into my house.
Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do in society.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So he'd waited till Friday, and he had a friend call the police for him. In his police interviews, Smith described delivering shots to the heads of both Haley and Nick after they were wounded and on the basement floor. So in his statement, he said that Kiefer had let out a short laugh after she fell down the stairs, and he said to police that if you're trying to shoot somebody and they laugh at you, you go again. So...
Well, of course you do, right?
Yeah. So the police aren't believing that she laughed, right? That doesn't make any sense.
No, this is really suspicious.
Yeah.
I mean, just the whole story from the get-go. Why didn't you call on the day it happened?
Well, right there, you know something's wrong.
Right.
Yeah. And then they're over on a tarp, and yeah, it's just really turning out to be suspicious.
Very.
Now, although he didn't mention it to the police, he had set up an audio recording in his basement. And this turned out to be significant evidence that the shooting was planned by Smith, and that he was, in fact, lying in wait on Haley and Nick.
Yeah, it's a chilling tape.
It is. The audio tape recorded Smith practicing what he would say to a lawyer and where he would shoot one of the burglars in the left eye. It didn't record Haley laughing, as Smith had claimed, but she is heard crying, "Oh my God." Smith acknowledged firing more shots than he needed to and that he fired a good, clean, finishing shot into Haley's head after she was already incapacitated and obviously unarmed. They were both unarmed. So legal analysts have said that the initial shootings probably would have been justified under Minnesota's laws, but once they were injured, any threat was removed. Now, neither Haley nor Nick were armed. Nick was seen looking into Smith's windows to see if anyone was home, so clearly they wanted to break into an empty home and steal things.
Yes.
Yes. I don't think anyone thinks they had any violence in mind.
No, just a petty crime of breaking and entering to steal things to sell and get some money to support their minor drug habits, right?
Well, I don't know, minor or, but, yeah, okay. I don't know about petty and minor, but still.
Well, I'm trying to put it in a better light.
Well, I mean, I think it's clear that they were doing something wrong. I'm not going to say it was okay what they were doing.
No, there's no question that they were breaking the law.
Right, right.
And had been. I mean, as you said, there is evidence that they'd broken into other places.
Yeah, but the thing about it is that Byron Smith definitely wanted Nick to think no one was home. Another really suspicious thing was how he moved his truck. He moved his truck a couple blocks away.
Right. He wanted it to appear as if his house was unoccupied, kind of inviting people to break in.
Yeah, as a trap.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he told police he wanted to clean his garage and he wanted it out of the way. Now, normally, if you clean your garage, I think if you back it out like 10 feet maybe from the exit, you're good.
Yeah, you don't need to park it two blocks away.
No.
Right?
No, I don't think so. Now, Morrison County Sheriff Michael Wetzel said that the law doesn't permit you to execute somebody once a threat has been removed. So after the person is no longer a threat because they're wounded, in this case, the whole application of self-defense is over. So many things in this case were not consistent with self-defense, including moving his car and shooting each victim. He shot Nick 3 times and Haley 6 times.
Yeah, he used a lot of ammunition on them.
He did.
And as you said, he had kill shots for both of them.
That's just gross.
It sure is.
Yeah. So he recorded at least 6 hours of audio on a digital recorder in his basement. He was sitting in a chair at the bottom of the stairs with a loaded rifle and a tape recorder that captured his lengthy monologue and both killings. So prior to any break-in, he's heard saying, "In your left eye," right?
Yeah.
And he's, like, practicing what he's going to say to a lawyer. "I realize I don't have an appointment, but I would like to see one of the lawyers here." Really creepy. And the prosecution noted most disturbingly that Haley Kiefer was shot in the left eye after he'd said that.
Right.
When he was supposed to not even know anyone was coming. He was just reading.
But he recorded it.
Yes.
In the left eye.
Right.
And that's what happened.
Yes. And then after the shootings, he said he wasn't a bleeding heart liberal. He said he felt like he was cleaning up a mess and that he was doing his civic duty because law enforcement couldn't handle it and that he pretty much had to do this.
Yeah, we don't have any information that he had called the police, do we, about the break-ins?
No.
I mean, there was no investigation whatsoever.
No, well, his friend, was it Bill Anderson, said that he had reported it to police, but from what I read, he hadn't.
Right.
Right, he hadn't even called police about it.
No, and we would have known that. I mean, there would be on police logs that,
yes, yes,
that they were responding to a call from a citizen about break-ins at that person's house.
Right.
So, he didn't call, or hadn't called.
Right. So he said the law system couldn't handle it, I had to do it. She dropped her problem in my lap. I mean, he was really rambling. And he said, "I had to clean it up." So his statements to police, the excessive shots fired, and and Smith's own recording led to him being charged with second-degree murder. Then in April of 2013, he was charged with two counts of first-degree murder, and bail was set at $50,000, which he posted, and then he went to stay with a neighbor. So laws and opinions in this case divided people in the Little Falls community. Other states such as Florida have stand-your-ground laws, but Minnesota has what's called the reasonable person doctrine. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the laws, what you found out?
Oh, sure. And as you said, there's a few different laws. There's the stand-your-ground law, there's the castle doctrine, and there's another one called a duty to retreat. Now, that's the simplest one, and this is a law in 18 states, including the state we live in.
The duty to retreat?
The duty to retreat.
Okay.
And this law states that a person must retreat from a situation if that person feels threatened. So use of deadly force is considered a last resort. And you may not use deadly force if you're safely inside your home. So that's one statute, which Minnesota doesn't have.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Then we have the Stand Your Ground law, which basically says that there's no duty to retreat from a situation before resorting to deadly force. And this statute, this law, isn't just limited to your home or property. You can be walking down the street.
Yeah, I think that's kind of crazy. This is the whole thing with Trayvon Martin.
Exactly.
It made Zimmerman get off on that.
He did.
Yeah.
So there's 23 states that have that. And then we have the Castle Law or Castle Doctrine.
23? Wow, that's a lot.
Well, the Castle Law is 41 of our 50 states.
Wow.
And I know these all don't add up, so some states have a combination of laws.
Oh, okay.
So they might have a Castle Law, but they also have a Duty to Retreat Law.
Okay.
So, but anyway, the Castle Law allows you to use deadly force in certain cases. So in this situation, an intruder must be making or have made an attempt to unlawfully or forcibly enter an occupied residence, business, or vehicle. The intruder must be acting unlawfully. The occupant of the home or vehicle must reasonably believe that the intruder intends to inflict serious bodily harm or death. And then the occupant or occupants must not have provoked or instigated the intrusion. So this is a little different. I mean, it sounds similar to Stand Your Ground, but this is limited to property.
Okay.
So Stand Your Ground, you can be walking down the street and feel threatened and shoot somebody.
You can follow them according to...
Right, if you feel threatened. But in the Castle Doctrine,
yeah,
you have to be in your home or your place of business.
Okay.
Or your vehicle. Now, Minnesota doesn't have any of those, right?
Right.
Okay. But they do have a statute, which is Section 609.06. How's that?
Well, it's a nice number. What is it called?
It's just a statute.
Okay.
Involving deadly force. So this one says, for Minnesota, that the intentional taking of the life of another is not authorized, except when necessary in resisting or preventing an offense which the actor reasonably believes exposes the actor or another person to great bodily harm or death, or in the prevention of the commission of a felony in the actor's place of abode. So that's where we get the kids breaking and entering.
Sure.
They were committing a felony.
Right. But are you obligated to warn people if you have a gun and they're coming into your house, or you can just shoot them?
According to the Minnesota statute, no.
I wonder why that is. Don't you think you should have to warn them? Don't police have to warn people? Like, police, freeze or I'll shoot.
Right.
So shouldn't everybody do that?
Well, one would reasonably think so, right?
That's what I would think.
Yeah. But... Not from what I've discovered in Minnesota.
Okay.
So
if he'd shot each kid once on the steps and even waited a day, he might have gotten away with that.
He might have.
Yeah.
If he had done that. And he didn't make that tape. I mean, I think the tape is pretty damning.
Well, I think he was making the tape to use in his own defense, which means he wasn't thinking very clearly.
He sure wasn't.
Because it definitely was what it went against him.
Well, no, I mean, that tape opens up the whole thing about premeditation and wanting to harm them.
I think moving the car was pretty significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was luring them in.
And the waiting a day after was pretty weird. But the most chilling evidence at trial was definitely the recording of the killings. I mean, on the audio, you can hear Smith breathing heavily, and he sounds really angry. He's standing over the terrified girl, and he just kind of shoots her calmly, you know, saying sorry about that when his gun jams. That's like psychopathic behavior.
Oh, it sure is.
You know, then he reloads and fires again, and he calls them vermin afterwards. He fires his first shot at Nick when he sees his hips on the stairs, so he hasn't even seen him totally to see if he was holding a gun or anything. And then he shoots a second time. And then he shoots the fatal shot to his face, and he says, "You're dead." And then drags him away on a tarp. Then he reloads and waits for Haley, and Haley enters the house. It's quiet. Nick's body's been moved out of sight, so he's setting her up. Because she's just coming to look for her cousin.
And there's no warning or anything.
No, she can be heard at the top of the stairs saying, "Nick." And then she waits for a little bit and starts heading slowly down the steps. And he just shoots her. And you can hear a thud, and then you hear the gunshot, the loud click, you know, where the gun jams. And he says, "Oh, sorry about that," before he shoots her again.
Yeah, he's pretty cold-blooded.
Very. He shoots her four more times while she's wounded on the ground for a total of six shots, like I said. And then afterwards, he calls her a bitch. And, you know, like we said, he shot her in the left eye.
Yeah.
And then the fact that he described it to the police as a clean, what did he say, clean finishing shot?
A clean finishing shot.
That's horrible.
It's like he's out hunting.
Yeah.
And he got a deer or something, you know?
Yeah.
The clean finishing shot.
I'm not really in favor of that either, but
right,
to say it about a person is really astounding.
Very, very cold.
Yeah. So, now I've debated this. Tell me what you think. But before we get into the trial, I thought I'd just play an edited version of the shootings.
No, I think it'd be good so people can hear his thinking and his words.
Now, the events happen over like a 10 to 15 minute period. But I have edited it down to just, you know, I've edited out a lot of the blank spots, the dead air. So right. It's like about 5 minutes long. So yeah. Why don't I play that now? And no, then we can talk a little bit more about the trial.
I think it's pretty instructive.
Yeah.
For the audience to listen to this.
Yeah, but be forewarned, it is disturbing. And if anyone doesn't want to hear it, just you can fast forward 5 minutes and, you know, we'll still be talking about it. You won't miss anything. It's just, I think from listening to it, you get a real idea of this guy, you know, how he was really speaking.
Oh, you sure do.
We can tell you what he said, but you don't get the real feeling of it unless you hear it yourself.
No, you got to hear it.
Okay. Well, let's play it, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Liberal. like I was cleaning up a mess. Not like spilled food. Not like vomit. Not even like diarrhea. The worst mess possible. And some tiny little respect. I was doing my civic duty. Because the law enforcement system couldn't handle it, I had to do it. I had to do it. They weren't human. I don't see them as human. I see them as vermin. This bitch was going to go through her life spoiling things for other people. Thieving, robbing, drug use. It's all fun, cool, exciting, and highly profitable until somebody kills you. Like I give a damn who she is. I'm sorry. There's so much regret. I try to be a good person. I try to do what I should, be friendly to other people, help them when I can. Try to be a good citizen, not cheat people, be fair. And because I try to be a decent person, they think I'm a patsy. I'm a sucker. They think I'm there for them to take advantage of. Is that the reward for being a good person? And if I gather enough evidence, they might be prosecuted. If they're prosecuted, it might go to court. If it goes to court, they might be found guilty. If they're found guilty, they might spend 6 months, 2 years in jail. And then they're out, and they need money worse than ever, and they're filled with revenge. I cannot live a life like that. I cannot have that chewing on me for the rest of my life.
So, pretty chilling, huh?
It certainly is. Yeah. And it's apparent from listening to that tape that he intended to kill people.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you've got his other actions. So this wasn't just a matter of catching the people that were breaking into his house. His intent was to kill the people that were breaking into his house.
Yeah, he was pretty much saying he was taking care of it because the police wouldn't. And that even if they did get caught, they'd get out again and they'd be even worse. And he was doing the world a favor, he was pretty much saying.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
And we know from what he did with his truck. I mean, he moved his truck to make it appear that his house was empty.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically inviting people to try to break in because he's been broken into before.
Yes.
And then lying in wait for them with the purpose of killing them.
Yeah. It's about as cold-blooded as you can get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't hear any place on the tape, "Stop, I have a gun," anything like that.
Well, no, he actually shoots them, and when they're on the ground helpless, shoots them again. What would stop him from calling the police there? I mean,
right.
There's no point arguing it. It's very clear.
Yeah, it's basically a slam dunk here.
Yeah. Well, the audio recordings were named by the jurors to have been the biggest influence on their decision, and the defense said that Byron Smith was nearly mad with fear, that he hadn't called on Thursday because he was terrified, and his defense lawyer claimed that he was worried there were more intruders coming, and that he was hiding in a closet that whole time. What do you think of that?
Well, it doesn't sound like the voice on the tape was going to be doing any of that stuff, hiding in a closet. He might be waiting for more people to come and with the idea of killing them.
Wow.
But he wasn't cowering in a closet.
No, for 24 hours.
No.
And it just really freaks me out to think of him being in the house with these two dead kids. And he probably had dinner, and who knows what he did.
Yeah.
Creepy. Maybe he slept, I imagine.
Sure. You know, he has these kids wrapped up in a tarp, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just continued with his daily business as usual.
You think?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Well, on April 29th of 2014, he was found guilty on two counts of first-degree murder with premeditation. And it only took the jury 3 hours. So I guess they were pretty much thinking what we're thinking.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way it's presented, he's guilty. There's no doubt about it.
Well, I mean, when it was first becoming news, there was a split in the town of people thinking that, you know, well, damn right, it's my house and these druggies breaking in. I would do the same thing. A lot of people said that.
Well, sure. That's before they knew the actual facts.
Right.
And if all you know is that two intruders who were breaking into a house to rob the house were shot and killed, yeah.
Right.
You can see where there'd be some sympathy towards him.
But I would think even in the most extreme cases, if you shoot the first one, the second one's going to leave. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or between the first and the second, why didn't Byron, when he knew that there was a second person in there, why didn't he say, I've got a gun?
Right. But he actually sat and waited several minutes for her to come in.
Yeah.
So he knew. He probably had seen that there were two of them out there.
Probably.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any warning at all. He just shot them both.
Yes, repeatedly. So in 2015, defense attorneys for Smith appealed, and they argued that Smith's trial was riddled with mistakes, right up until the prosecutor's closing arguments. Now, they argued that the judge prohibited them from giving a complete defense because they weren't allowed to present testimony from Nick Brady's friends that linked him to prior burglaries. And Judge Anderson had ruled that efforts to link Nick Brady, to prior burglaries were irrelevant because there was no evidence that Smith knew who Nick was or believed that it was Nick who had broken in on previous occasions.
Well, I would certainly agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't have any bearing on the case.
Now, although the jury heard some evidence of prior burglaries from other witnesses, the defense argued that the testimony would have substantiated the previous break-ins that were bore directly on Smith's state of mind. So just the knowledge of the break-ins would say something about his state of mind when he elected to use deadly force. But the thing is, I mean, he did use deadly force and then he continued to execute them.
Right.
Right?
He did.
And they also criticized the court for not allowing them to show jurors a shoe print match on a broken door panel from a previous break-in or a picture of the gun that had been stolen from Smith's house previously. They also weren't allowed to present testimony from a former law enforcement officer about critical incident stress and how adrenaline produces tunnel vision. Now, this is not a documented situation. You know, I've looked into this, and sure, people have stress, but this whole critical incident stress, there's no proof that it causes tunnel vision. It's a theory. And this was a law enforcement officer, not a psychiatric professional.
Right. It wasn't...
And that's why it wasn't allowed.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And even if it were, I mean, he shoots them more than once, and he does kill shots to the head. So,
yeah, I mean, that to me almost sounds like a video game, something you'd say in a video game.
I mean,
that's horrible.
That's not tunnel vision.
No, it's not.
That's intent.
He
meant to kill them.
He did. In early 2016, the Minnesota Supreme Court affirmed Smith's conviction, ruling that errors by the prosecution alleged in the appeal did not deny him a fair trial. So the Supreme Court also ruled that the district court should not have allowed Smith to challenge a restitution request to cover the cost of the headstones for Haley and Nick. So the Supreme Court ordered the district court to award restitution of $19,000 for the two headstones for the teenagers.
So he had to pay for those?
Yes.
Huh.
Small okay. price to pay, I guess.
I guess so.
Yeah.
And I know the defense attorney's aim is to best represent his client, but those are poor arguments at best.
Well, his defense attorney was trying to say that he was mad with fear, but they didn't try an insanity defense.
No.
And they didn't say he wasn't competent to stand trial.
Not at all.
No.
So
he wasn't mad. But he did seem kind of crazy in the generic sense of the word, you know, crazy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
The way he babbled to himself and the way he spoke was weird.
If you listen to that tape, those are the ramblings of a really deranged person.
Yes, right. And maybe deranged is different than insane.
It probably comes down to the same thing.
You think so?
Yeah. Because no sane person, rational person, is going to do what he did.
No.
I mean, he had opportunity to simply say, I have a gun. I'll use it. Get out of the house. I'm going to call the police. I mean, there's any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have called the police at any time after the previous break-ins.
Yeah, and if he was worried about them getting away, he could have shot him in the leg and called the police.
Right.
Right.
And just his argument that it wouldn't matter anyway, even if they were found guilty and sentenced and served some time or had probation, he'd still be in fear.
Right.
No.
Well, that's like...
That doesn't
like,
hold water.
No, that's like speaking like Charles Bronson in Death...
No, Death Wish?
Death Wish. What was he? He was a... There's a word for it.
He was a vigilante.
Vigilante. That's what it is. That's vigilante justice.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it isn't even like that because they're not... These people weren't killers. They were just stealing things.
Right.
Right.
His things.
So, yes, so right.
I can certainly empathize with him. He's been broken into probably more than once.
Would be frightening,
and
sure.
You're frightened of that.
Yeah.
But his actions are just way over the top.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, it would be scary to have your house broken into, and you might feel a little uneasy. But he did have cameras, so I wonder where the monitors were to those cameras, if he could see. If he was actually watching from inside when Nick was peeking in the windows and stuff.
Well, you get the impression that he was.
You kind of do,
that
yeah.
He was aware that the break-in was in progress before the glass broke.
Yes, he was waiting.
Yeah.
Because the gun was ready. He had two guns, actually, that he shot them with. A shotgun and I think it was a .22. Oh. You know, he did claim that there were guns stolen from his house on previous occasions, so... He said, well, if they'll steal guns, then they'll use guns. But that's kind of a faulty claim, too, because some people steal guns to sell them for the money, especially in a rural area like that. That I could see that.
Well, and then it still gets back. Even if he was worried that they were breaking into his house to steal something and they had the guns that they had stolen previously, he still just has to say, I have a gun. Go away. I'm calling the police.
Yeah, and dial 911.
Yeah.
Not wait a day later till someone calls him and say, well, you might want to send a deputy out here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't hold up.
No. Yeah, I wondered how his defense attorney said with a straight face that he was afraid. And, well, he said the things he said weren't really making sense because he was just in such fear. He was mad with fear, like I said.
Yeah, I guess you could argue that he was just mad with madness.
You know? Yeah.
It doesn't sound like he was afraid.
No.
In that tape. It sounded like he was cleaning up.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
And do you know that the family members stayed in the courtroom and listened to that? I can't imagine. I mean, it's upsetting to listen to as a stranger. But if that was a family member or your child, that's...
No.
Horrible. I don't think I would have stayed for it.
I wouldn't have.
No.
I mean, I hadn't heard that segment before. I mean, it was tough to listen to.
It was. Especially the part afterwards.
Yeah.
The way he talks
when
about
he's talking
them.
About him.
Yeah.
Please.
Now how you could treat anybody like that. So, it's really sad for the families.
Yeah. And, well, but I think that it was... an easy decision for the jury, and I think they got it right.
That's true. So this is one of those instances where we can be happy with what the jury... And it seems like lately we haven't been happy with juries.
No, we've been questioning them.
Yeah.
But this was easy, I think.
This jury did a good job, although I think it was pretty easy to determine, especially with that tape.
I think all you have to do is listen to the tape and say, uh-huh.
But I would say even without the tape, he probably would have been convicted. Might not have been as easy, but the waiting a day...
Oh, yeah.
And the multiple shots, I mean.
There's all sorts of things.
Yeah.
That probably would have gotten him convicted anyway. But the tape was kind of the icing on the cake.
I think so. Served him up guilty to everybody without question.
Well, and as you said, the jury deliberated for a pretty short time.
3 hours.
So.
They probably said, okay, well, we know what we're going to do. Should we have a sandwich? And then we'll let the judge know we're ready.
Right.
I mean, you review that, there really isn't much to argue.
There sure isn't.
No. All right, well, this was a really sad case, and it really makes me angry. I can just see if those were my kids or family members, I'd just be really furious.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, I hate this guy.
The senselessness of it all.
Yeah, what a jerk. I mean, just a disgusting jerk.
He didn't need to do what he did.
No.
A simple matter to chase him off.
Absolutely.
And even before. I mean, again, it's a small town. The police probably could have figured out pretty easily who was doing it.
Well, yeah, I think that's something we didn't talk about, is that Nick and some of his friends had done some yard work the previous summer at his house. And then he felt like, you know, they'd kind of cased the place and seen that he had valuables and cash. So they decided they were going to rob the place. Now, I don't know if they robbed it twice or 11 times. But I think he had an idea that it was this group of kids, you know, because he said something in that tape about, oh, you be nice to them and they think you're a patsy. And So he could have said to the police, you know, these kids were here in the summer and I think they're breaking in and stealing things. Or even, you know, shown them the camera. You know what he filmed on the camera.
Well, yeah.
So.
I mean, there's so many opportunities for it to have been resolved. Without the deaths of these kids.
Absolutely.
But it wasn't.
Yeah.
He was a vigilante.
Yes, I agree.
And he took the law into his own hands and killed these kids.
Yes. Yeah, there were a couple other cases I've heard of like this. There was one where a guy put a purse in the garage. He knew some kids were, like, breaking into cars for things. You know, and I'm not really, I don't know the details off the top of my head, but it was another setup type situation, like to set the trap. It's almost like,
so
you're, you know, baiting a trap. Yeah. And then just waiting and shooting them. So that's not okay.
No.
No, that's horrible. Okay. Well, thanks, Dickie. That was a good talk, but really a sad case.
Truly is.
Kind of makes me feel down about society.
Well, certain segments anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, on the other hand, the jury got it right, so that should be uplifting about.
So we should be happy with the justice system.
It worked, yes. That's true.
And the appeal was denied.
Yes, that's true. So he'll be in prison for the rest of his life.
He should be.
He should be, yeah. Well, you know, there are several ways to support True Crime Brewery. Did you know that?
I've heard this before. There are many ways, and we hope that some people will take one of these ways.
Maybe even more than one.
Sure.
First of all, we have our 5-star reviews that are greatly appreciated, and they help us increase our audience. Now, in that vein, I'd just like to mention that after you do your 5-star review, maybe you want to call with a voicemail or write me an email about your theories about the case. You know, we talk about a case, then we talk about, well, maybe this has happened, and maybe this is why so-and-so did this. You know, that's the fun of the show, is to debate these things, I think.
Yeah, I mean, think it would be fun to have some discussion.
Yeah, so
other
if you're,
than the two of us.
Well, right, that's the point. I'd like to get more voices in.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do write in with opinions. And if you're listening to the podcast and you're thinking, but wait, they probably did it for this reason, because I'm sure we miss things and it drives people crazy. We miss something obvious or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just get that into us and we can develop like a little feedback section, like I said, where we'll, engage in those types of conversations.
Exactly.
And if people have questions, I'll try and take the time and research it a little bit, too.
Sounds like a good idea.
Okay, so we're going to gradually move in that direction.
Okay.
Depending on how much feedback we get.
Right.
Okay. And then also we have the Amazon affiliate link, tygrabber.com/Amazon. So this is when you just do your Amazon shopping, especially if you have Amazon Prime, you might do a lot of Amazon shopping. You can just buy whatever you'd buy as you normally would, except instead of going to Amazon.com, go to tygrabber.com/Amazon. Or go to tygrabber.com and click on the little blue sentence that says Shop Amazon and Support Tygrabber. And then for everything you buy, we'll get a little bit of money back from Amazon to help support the podcast.
And as we've said before, this is at no additional cost to you.
That's
right. You're spending your usual amount that you would at Amazon, and Amazon kicks a few pennies to us.
That's right. You can also join Team Tygrabber and pledge $2, $3, or $5 a month to keep True Crime Brewery up and running. And you get a little gift with that, depending on what you donate. And I'm also working on having some premium episodes for members only, and that should be coming up by March at the latest. I've got the software now. I just have to figure out how to use it.
Okay.
Okay. And then we can start doing that. So we'll have our regular weekly episodes like we do now, and then we'll have a bonus episode, hopefully at least once a month. And then probably we'll have special things once in a while also to add in just for members.
Well, that's a good idea.
Fun things, yeah. Maybe we'll even have contests only for members, so your chances of winning are higher.
I like that.
Yeah. And we also have a store now on our website. It is the True Crime Brewery store. So if you go to tygrabber.com/shoptcb or go to tygrabber.com and click in the menu where it says Shop the Brewery, we have t-shirts, we have snifters, we have coasters.
And we have stickers.
Stickers. And then now we have the new credit card bottle openers.
Cool.
So those, they fit in your wallet or your purse or even your back pocket. So then when you're out and about and you come across a good beer, you're not looking for a bottle opener.
Because you have it.
You have it.
Good idea.
It's flat. It's easy. It's not like those big ugly ones you used to have on your keychain that break.
Right.
This is a very stylish little item.
These are cool.
So those are for sale now also on our website.
Good.
And that's how you can support the brewery.
So dig deep into your pockets, folks.
Or dig deep into your brain and send us some ideas.
Either way.
For some feedback discussions, follow-up discussions on cases.
Love to hear from you.
All right, so until next time.
Till then.
All the best to you, and
we'll see you at the quiet end.
That's right. Bye-bye.
Bye.